Hello and welcome to Fueling Around with me, Jason Plato, and my very own Abel Seaman. It's Dave Vitti.
All aboard.
Now, Fueling Around is powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Dave, how are you, mate?
I'm very good. Thank you, Jason Plato. How are you? You're looking resplendent in your flat cap today.
Well, you know the reason why, because literally, you probably have the same thing. Until I come on this platform we've got, yeah. I can't see myself. And I had shit hair, did I not?
Yeah, you came on, right? So to let you into the mystery and the mystique of behind the stage in the world of podcasting. So you came on and I saw you and you just looked at yourself and you said, what the hell is that? Well, you didn't use the word hell, you used another word, but it's a family show. What is that? And then you disappeared to go and get yourself a flat cap to cover your hair because your hair was slightly unkempt, I think.
I've run out of mousse.
Oh, have you?
Or right. Wax or whatever these young'uns use nowadays.
Well, you're worth it, Jason, I think.
Oh, look at that. That's a good little that's a good little link. Anyway, look, pretty exciting day today. Mm. Because our guest is a gentleman who's best described as a footballing legend. With 75 caps for England and more than 400 appearances for Arsenal under his belt, we know we're in safe hands. It is, of course, Mr. David Seaman, MBE. David, welcome, mate. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. You too?
Yeah, good.
Oh, good. David, it's lovely to see you. It's been a while. Thank you very much for joining us on the podcast today. You and I have known each other for many years, it's true to say. But I don't think we've ever actually talked cars, so I'm looking forward to that in a little while. But let's kick off with the most important first question, I think. How's the fishing season going for you so far, and what's the biggest thing that you've caught?
Fishing season so far has been average for me.
Oh, really? Why? Yeah. Pray tell.
Yeah, because I've not caught a lot of fish, if I'm honest, but I've changed tactics. I'm after, so, as you know, I live on a river and I've been getting some fish out of the river, but I've been targeting some big carp and my sights aren't really set in properly yet. I've had them up to about 28 pounds.
Yeah,
which is a decent fish.
Exactly.
Oh, no, keep going.
Oh, you're joking.
Yeah, the big ones. Yeah.
So. But what's that in metric numbers, kilos? I can't work in
pounds. 28 pounds in kilos is about what? 20.
No,
about 14 kilos, something like that.
Proper monster then.
Yeah, but I've had them up to 42 pounds, so that's quite a decent.
Out of our English rivers?
Out of the lakes. But having said that, there used to be a 50-pounder swimming in Marlow in the River Thames.
Really?
Yeah, the time that I lived there, me and Frankie lived there, it was actually still alive. It's since passed away. But there was a 50-pounder in the stretch that I was fishing. I'm sure I hooked it one day.
Well, do you know what?
The one that got away.
I remember this. So, first of all, for those that didn't realise, David is somewhat mad on fishing, I think it's fair to say, right?
I've just read the interview you did in Carp Weekly or bi-monthly, I think, this morning. What a story that is. I mean, yours were massive that you caught that day, didn't you?
Exactly, yeah. You can imagine how wide my arms go.
Yeah, absolutely. But the thing was, I remember when you lived in that house in Marlow and it was right on the river and it was hilarious, Jason, because what used to happen is David would have his rods, you know, a couple or three rods going out over the balcony into the river, but he's got alarms on them, right? So we're upstairs watching the football, right?
No way.
And then there's alarms that ping when something happens. So then halfway through, he'll go
legging it downstairs.
to see what's going on one of the rods. And either it is something exciting that needs bringing in, or it's like, false alarm, doesn't matter. Come back upstairs again, carry on watching the football. So it was this...
That's genius. That's the sort of fishing I'd like to do.
Exactly.
Because then you could be in watching a bit of, you know, whatever.
Anything,
on the TV,
having
a scoop or two.
People said to me, oh, it's cheating, you know, like using your alarm inside the house and everything. I go, no, it's advancing with the technology, mate. You know,
absolutely.
That's what you do.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So I'm right in thinking that you, David, and Dave, obviously we've got to refer to, you know, because you're David and Dave's just Dave. You go back a while because... Didn't Dave meet your wife Frankie? Because was she his dance partner?
That's right.
His dancing on ice partner.
Yeah, no, that was a long time ago, wasn't it, mate?
So obviously he didn't find him a threat. you know, with his small with his small stature. I'm obviously on the ice I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah, easy on the ice.
Yeah.
I tell you though, when I see the dancing on ice thing and I look at that, and when I look back at my time there, that is the most nerve-wracking thing I have ever done. I don't know about you, Dave, but it is terrifying.
Without a doubt, because it's that thing where I think everybody gets nervous before they go on any kind of television. I think anybody that doesn't is a liar. Yeah, you know, yeah. I think everybody, even seasoned pros that do it every day, there's always that element. So, of course, when you're waiting to go on...
In the tunnel.
So what there is, and this obviously, and you know, this must be the same presumably with Strictly. So you're sort of backstage waiting to come out, right? But of course, in this instance, you're on skates as well. You're on the ice. So... you're there rapidly trying to think about all the different steps in your routine and your mind just goes blank just before you're about to go there. You know, true? And there's wow. every chance that you might literally go arse over tip before you've even done anything, right?
You know what? I can imagine terrifying. The fear. I can imagine
honestly, it is shocking. You know, like you go out there, the first thing that you have to do, you go down the tunnel and then you have to like go out, smile and present. Ta-da! And your mouth is that dry. You're smiling, your top lip stays up there.
But no, it was terrifying, but a brilliant experience. But that's how we first met when I was skating with Frankie, and there's a lot of practice obviously goes on. You know, you do your training for the routines every week, but before that, you've got about 3 months worth of practicing at your local ice rink before you even get to that point. So this was Dancing on Ice January to, well, for me, it was January to February 2011, but you're training all the way through the back end of 2010, which is where we first met. So God, yeah, scarily, that's 13, 14 years ago, something like that now.
Whoa, it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So that's interesting. There's about 3 months worth of basic training. Because
I mean, you wouldn't know it from my routines, but genuinely, there was
well,
there was quite a lot of prep in it.
You need it. I mean, you know, I used to ice skate a little bit as a kid, but you know, we'd go there once every 3 months for a bit of it, you know, a bit of fun. But I took my girls a few years ago. Man, I was all over the place. I mean, I could stand on the ice. And even not on a TV show, I was rigid. Yeah. Which you know what I mean?
No, but like the older you get, the more the fear factor comes into it about falling over, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that's the thing, because you're like thinking to yourself, oh, God, if I fall over here, I can hurt myself now.
And it's a long way down from where you stand as well.
Exactly. I used to fall like a goalie. I would like fall and then dive, like elbow down, hip down, knee down. Not the best way.
Are you still doing a lot of skating, though?
Not lots, no. We do it for fun. You know, we do like charity auction prizes, stuff like that. We open the rinks, you know, these pop-up rinks around Christmas time. And we still go, I'd say probably like once or twice a month, just for our own enjoyment, you know. So, it's still there, mate, but it's a good workout, as you know.
Absolutely. Very, very good workout.
I love
so
it.
Listen, David, here we are in the world of podcasting, which is not something that we might have predicted, you know, whatever it was, 12, 13, 14 years ago. You're no stranger to this podcasting lark yourself, as your background may suggest. In fact, I don't even have to do the plug because it's written behind you. You are the proud owner of your own very successful podcast entitled Seaman Says, as you can see there. For those that aren't already subscribing, what's it all about? What can people expect?
They can expect me and our gang, Lindsay Hooper as well, who co-presents with me, talking about the weekend's games and then the weekend's games coming up. Obviously, quite a few stories. We have a few guests on there every now and then. And, you know, I've had this year or this season alone, I've had Arsene Wenger, Thierry Henry and Dennis Bergkamp. I need not say any more, do I?
Yeah. That's why he gets the big numbers, isn't it?
You know, and then, you know, and I know that Tom Hiddleston's dying to come on. He's just trying to pin him down for a date. And, you know, he's a massive Arsenal fan. And it was so funny when I met him. I met him at Soccer Aid. And when I looked at the list of like the guests that were playing, like celebs and that, and I saw Tom Hiddleston, Loki, I was like, oh my God, because I love all the Marvel films and everything. Yeah. And then as I was going to my room, Tom's walking the other way. And I'm like, oh my God, Tom, I said, I'm so happy to meet you. It's such a pleasure. And he went, I am so happy to meet you. You're an absolute legend. And I was like, yes, he's coming to the podcast.
Consider him booked.
Yeah, exactly. So since then, I took you to we went to watch an Arsenal game together as well. So that was cool. Yeah, so he can't say no now.
Absolutely.
So, in terms of the football, David, did you not fancy going down the managerial route?
No, not at all. I was interested in becoming a goalkeeping coach.
Right.
Not long after I retired. But it was weird because back then, you know, and it's been 20 years since I've been retired, by the way. Back then, they told me that I had to do my outfield coaching badge before I could do my goalkeeping badge.
Mm-hmm.
And me being a Yorkshireman, and it proper rubbed me up the other way. And I was like, well, the outfield players don't have to do my goalkeeping badge, so why do I have to do theirs?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so then I lost a bit of interest, and it's not till recently now. Well, I say recently, I've been going to Arsenal now for like nearly 2.5 years. I go in once a week and coach with the young goalkeepers, so under 21s and the under 18s. And actually, at the weekend, last weekend, I actually took the goalkeepers for their first warm-up, or for my first warm-up, I should say, because the normal guy, Chris Terps, he got injured and he couldn't serve. So he asked me if I would go in, and we actually did the warm-up together, and Arsenal beat Reading 3-0. The under 18, hey, so very there good. You go. Another clean sheet.
Tick.
Exactly. Tick. Job done.
Hey, look, I've got a quick question. I've always wondered this over the years that, you know, I used to play a little bit of football at school, and I always had the mindset, if I was going to take a penalty, I was almost convinced, like 95%, it would go in the net. And I can imagine, right, I can imagine that all professional footballers, the odds are really in their favour. So how do you approach that? Because not often do great goalkeepers like yourself save them. More often than not, they go in. So how do you process that?
I used to love penalty shootouts or
did
penalties
you?
Because it's a chance of glory, and you're not expected to save them.
Mm.
You know, and even if you like you go the right way and it hits your hand and then goes in or bobbles in, you don't get blamed.
No,
you never get blamed for letting one in. You know, and sometimes you should do.
Mm.
You know, but I used to think, oh, a chance of glory, this. You know, and I used to really look forward to them.
I get that.
There's no pressure, is it? All the pressure's on the person taking it.
Yeah.
And everyone's expecting you. And if by chance, well, not by chance, because obviously there's work and there's research that goes into it, you know, in terms of studying the form. But if you do make that save, as you say, it's suddenly, you know, you're a hero.
Yeah. You know, you look at me, you know, I saved 3 in a penalty shootout in a semi-final of a European Cup. Obviously, Euro 96, I saved the one against Scotland and then Spain. You know, so I've had a lot of, like, penalty shootouts where I've been successful, and it is. And I would imagine that that's as close to the feeling of scoring a goal a goalkeeper will ever get.
Yeah, I bet.
But obviously some goalkeepers have scored a goal, but I would never go up the other end. It's way too far for me to run back.
But you see that, don't you? You know when keepers come forward, like right at the end of a game where literally it's kind of like all or bust, and the keeper comes up, and if for any reason, you know, then the play goes the other way, they haven't half got to...
They have to sprint back. I saw Peter Schmeichel do it, and then there's footage of this. He was sprinting back so fast, he popped his hamstring. It was unbelievable.
No way, is that right?
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was so funny. And that's why I don't go up for corners.
Wow. Absolutely. Listen, let's get on to cars, David. I mean, it's loosely a car podcast. It's mainly us just blathering about stuff, as you've probably got the gist of so far. But let's get on to cars.
Well, actually, Dave, you two, I've done a bit of research here, and I can see you two have got a little bit in common about your early car motoring choices.
We have, but don't give that away. But you're absolutely right, because you know a little bit about my past, a little bit too much about my past. But anyway, that's another story. Back to cars, David Seaman. It's a few years ago now, obviously, but you obviously remember that day, that rite of passage where you passed your test. Were you? What happened? How many attempts? Tell me the story.
I was in Rotherham. I was a 17-year-old.
Hometown?
Yeah, hometown Rotherham. And I'll never forget, I was filling the form out with my dad. And it says, you know, and there's a box. It says, tick the box if you're able to complete a test within 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And my dad says, oh, well, tick that because you might get up the list a bit earlier.
So
no lessons, right? So I tick the box, we send it off in the post as it was back then. And next thing, it comes through, I've got 2 weeks before my test.
Oh, it did work then. You got jumped up.
Yeah, but I'd only had lessons with my dad.
Yeah.
So these aren't like proper lessons. Mm. So I ended up, I had two double lessons by a proper instructor.
Yeah, yeah.
And then went straight into my test and passed first time. Wow. I could not believe it. And it was weird because so then when I passed my test, I came back and I said to my mum, I went, I've passed. She's like, you never.
bit like saving a penalty. You weren't expected to do it.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And then she went, there you are. She took me the car keys. We used to have a van for the shop. It was like an escort estate.
Mm-hmm.
And she took me the keys. She went, yeah, I'll go and put, get something from shop or sort of whatever it was. I was like, excellent. What, on my own?
Yeah.
How good is
and that?
That
was it. That was as quick as it was, you know, and I just, yeah.
It's a great feeling, isn't it? It's the first time, I think, are you growing up, do you actually really truly get what freedom means?
Yeah.
Isn't
yeah.
it?
I know. And then just to go out and just to, and my mum would like, where are you going? I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And you just go and drive. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've said this a few times, David, but I will always remember when I just passed my test, and actually it was my Auntie Carol's little Mark I Fiesta, little blue one that I borrowed. And I went up to Blockbuster Video Shop to go and get a video just because it was something to do. It was somewhere to go. Yeah. It was only like 5-10 minutes around the corner. But it's that thing where you look to your left and there's no one there. And it's the first time, you know, because yeah. obviously every other time there's either been your dad there in your instance and with me, because he was the one that taught me to drive. And likewise, I had a few lessons from a proper instructor, but you look left and you think there's no one here. And that's the point at which you actually learn to drive properly.
Yes.
Because you're not concentrating. You haven't got somebody who's looking over your shoulder and you're driving at 10 to 2. That's when you actually, that's when the journey really starts, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it is, and it is like you say, it's a great feeling of like getting out there on your own, and just being free, being able to do what you want, you know. And I've straight away with my kids, you know, I was like, pass your test, you know, like as soon as they were 17, you know, like got them, you know, they had cars already waiting, so it was more like a really like motivation for them to be able to drive them on their own, you know. So yeah, get them out of the house, whatever.
Hey, do you remember I'm sure we've had this conversation before, Dave, but David, do you remember the first time where you've looked in a you're driving up a high street, say, and you look at a shop and you get the reflection of yourself in the and you know, on your own? Isn't that a great thing?
Well, it is, but I'll let you into a little secret here, David, because the part of the story that Jason hasn't told you at this point is that on more than one occasion, when he's been looking at himself and admiring himself in his Hot Wheels, he may have actually kissed the car in front.
It's happened twice. It's happened twice. Once, actually, it was I mean, I tell people it was on purpose because she was particularly beautiful, this girl that we should have gone for. Oh, that's what I pretended. But yeah, I did actually whack into the back of one whilst I was smiling at myself, driving me Renault 19 Sport in that lovely
Who's that
floor.
Hot guy?
Oh, right, yeah. I did that, right? So I'd just passed my test and I was at Leeds as an apprentice at the time. And I was driving to and from Leeds back to Rotherham. And I'm in my mum's car in this. It was a green Ford Escort estate, and I'm driving back. And as I'm coming up to this roundabout, I'm looking right, and I keep looking right. And as I turn, but there's nothing coming on the roundabout. So as I turn back, the car in front of me stopped, and I've gone bump straight into the back of him.
Yeah,
and I'm like, oh no. Worst of all was there was a policeman right on the pavement on the roundabout, and I was like, oh god. And I got out, and he was like, he said, you're right? I went, yeah, fine. He went, how long you passed your test? I went, about 2 weeks. And he went, we can tell, can't we? You know, like when you just have to take it.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, all right. You know. So that was my first accident, 2 weeks into passing my test.
Do you know what? But that must be, I reckon, statistically, the most common accident or the most common accident place, isn't it? It's the whole looking right and the car in front of you changes their mind.
Yeah,
because they exactly. were going to go, and then they. I mean, I've had one of those as well. I think everybody's had one of those. You're looking right, you think they're going, and at the last minute they change their mind, and suddenly you go straight in the back of it.
You know, we only have one though. Yeah, that's it.
These things happen, don't they?
You're
so tell us about your first car. You know the full story.
Yep,
how much was it? Where was it? What was it?
So my first car was given to me by my mum and dad, and it was a Vauxhall Viva. A blue Vauxhall Viva, and it was an old car, And like I said, I used to use it to drive to and from Leeds. And I remember like being on the M1, and if I had my foot flat down, yeah, it would do about 75 mile an hour on the M1 downhill
with a tailwind.
Yeah, so that was it. And it was around about 300 quid back then that my mum and dad paid for it, but because they were getting another car, they let me have that one. So that was me. That was me on the road in my own car in a Vauxhall Viva.
That's a good start. So where does it go from then? So Viva's to start with. Where'd you go? Are you buying a car at this point? Is this like early apprentice footballer wages?
Early apprentice, just turned pro, and then
sorry, David. What sort of time scale is this? What year ish? Late 70s? Early 80s?
Yeah, so 73, 77, 78, 79. then I signed pro for Leeds, and I started, you know, it's only a little bit more money, it's nothing. And I spot a yellow Capri in a car, not in a showroom, in like a second-hand car show pen thing. And I see it, and I was like, oh, that looks ace. And it had got wide wheels on it and everything. Yeah, and I was like, and then I was like working out how much I needed to save up and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And anyway, I'd got enough saved up, and I buy this yellow Capri, and wow, it was honestly, it was the car of my dreams. It was amazing at the time, you know, and especially because it had the wide wheels on it as well.
Yeah.
But it was, I think it was about 600 quid for it or something like that. You know, it was second hand.
I tell you what,
yellow though, that's a strong statement, isn't it? Eh?
And I put my own stereo in it and everything. You know, and you think you're the nuts, don't you? And when you think back, you're like, wow.
But you know what? I personally think, and you know, having been a Capri owner myself, I had a white Capri Laser, 1.6 Laser, and I've said this before, but the typeface on the Laser was quite a round A, and it looked a little bit too much like Loser. It was a very round A, but I had one of those, which was, it was grossly underpowered. I mean, this huge, great bonnet, you know, that would have swallowed up a kind of V8, you know, and it had this
tiny little bulge in the bonnet.
The bonnet, there was plenty of room around the engine. I mean, you could have got several suitcases in there, you know, so such was the roominess of the engine compartment. But I love the Capri, and I now see them come up for sale on different things, you know, and they're going for good money now. But I think they're a really good looking car still to this day, and I think they're much maligned, you know, and they're kind of, I don't think they get the credit that they deserve in terms of how they look personally.
No, I agree. They're great cars, aren't they?
Yeah, but then after I got the yellow Capri, I got released by Leeds when I was, well, I must have been 19, so I'd had it a couple of years, and I get released by Leeds. I go down to Peterborough, fourth division, get re-signed by Peterborough. And as we're doing the contracts, my dad's doing the contract negotiations for me and everything. And and they offered me like £1,000 signing on fee or something like that, you know. And I was like, yeah, I'll sign it. Yeah. My dad's like, no, wait a minute. Because I'd seen this other Capri, right? My dad don't know. So anyway, my dad negotiated for me. He got me a little bit more money anyway. But all I was bothered about was this £1,000 signing on fee. And I bought a green Capri then.
Okay.
And it was off a Rotherham United player who I forgot his name now. And it was a 1.6 GL.
Yeah.
Green Capri. Mm. And that was like, that was new. Yeah, newish. Yeah. Not brand new, obviously, but it was
You've
newish.
You've got a thing for quite radical colours, haven't you, David?
I know.
Hey?
Yeah. But it gets better.
Oh.
Because then after that green Capri, I don't know where it came from, but or how I got it, but I actually got and bought an Audi Quattro.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, this is quite a good change.
Flared wheel arches and everything.
Mm.
Yeah.
With a flat, with a straight five in there.
Yeah, it was like a proper car. It was like the rally car, you know, you used to see on the TV. And I was like, wow, I've got a chance of getting that. I'm having it. Yeah,
that's a lovely bit of kit. I'll tell you what, I bet you wish you had that in the garage now.
Yeah, exactly. I know, and it was silver as well. It was a really cool car.
Wow. Absolutely. I mean, that would be worth some money now. We often say this, actually, when you look back at your sort of car history and even, you know, with the greatest respect, even sort of mundane car histories, when you look back at things like people who've had Escorts or Cortinas or Capris, you now think if you had them in the garage and they were in good nick, I mean, they'd be worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know? And especially something like that Audi would be crazy money. What's your favorite then? If you were looking back at like the early days, is the one that, Is it one of the Capris, I would imagine, is it?
I think the yellow Capri, my first ever Capri, was like a real favourite, you know, because it had such an impression on me and, you know, made me feel like so special, I suppose. But, you know.
Do you remember the Reg?
Well, no.
There we go. See, thank you. Thank you for that, David. Dave can remember every single car. And his next door neighbours and his mums and his best friends.
No, no idea.
Yeah. But I wonder if it's still alive. No, it's going to be dead, that car now, isn't it? I mean, it might be alive somewhere.
No, I doubt it. It was nearly dead when I had it.
You see, if you had the... I mean, this is what saddos like me do when it's a quiet news day, is that if you had the Reg, you can actually look online and you can check the MOT status of the car, and therefore you can see if it's still alive or not. I do it quite a lot on a regular basis. I look back at, you know, my old loved and losts.
So are any of your old ones still breathing?
No, they're all gone. They're all gone. I've looked, because I would love to find out that old Cortina that I had or the Capri was still living another life somewhere. Yeah. But they're all gone, I think. I think they've all been scrapped, which is really sad. But
well, so it's an indication of our age, I think.
Yeah, true.
Yes,
yeah.
I think
I've skipped a few cars, actually, because I've just remembered I had an Alfa Romeo Alfa Sud.
Oh, yeah, good bits of kit.
And then this was when I was at Birmingham. I had a Vauxhall GTE.
Yes, one with the electronic dashboard or the one before?
Yeah, no, the one with the electronic dashboard with the speedo thing, wasn't it? Yeah. And I what's just reminded me of that is, like you're saying about number plates, and already on the number plate was B111DOG. So like Bill Dog.
Oh, right. Listen. Hold that thought. I'm going to look if it's still alive now. Yeah, honestly. Right. Let's do this. So what is it? Big Dog?
Bill. No, B111. So Bill Dog.
Okay, hang on. Right. So B111. Don't worry. I mean, it sounds like an edit point, this. It sounds like the sort of thing that you should cut in, but I think this is important. B111DOG.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see if it's still
breathing.
Fingers
crossed she's alive.
No, you can't be.
Vauxhall Astra.
Yeah.
White, petrol, first registered 1st of April 1985.
White?
MO, is that not right then? Maybe it's put on...
It might have been put on my car, yeah, because the one that I had was red.
Yeah. Well, it's still...
It's still going as Bill Dog.
Yeah,
has it still got MOT? Is it still on the road, Dave?
Yeah, still on the
road. Dave. That's amazing. Mate, Mr. Seaman, you've got to buy that car. You've got to get it back.
Yeah, so that was, that was, because I remember then at Peterborough, then I went Birmingham and got the GTE, then I went to QPR and got the Audi.
And did that happen a lot then? When you're at clubs, presumably based upon sponsorship around the clubs, do you effectively have people kind of sort of throwing cars at you, or kind of, you know, David, come and drive this, or do you want one of these? Does it work like that or not?
It didn't back then. No, it probably does now, you know, because like I got to the stage where I was sponsored by Range Rover when I was at Arsenal. So I would get a brand new one every 6 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now I have to buy them. Anyway. So yeah, but back then it was like, it was all geared on like signing on fees. You know, so you get a signing on fee and you're like, whoa, what new car can I get? Not like, oh, I'll get a new dishwasher. Or, no, not a dishwasher. They went out. A new washing machine or a new oven or something, you know. And it was like, no, what car am I getting? And that's just the way it was.
Professional footballers have a penchant for saucy cars, don't they?
Yeah.
You never see a good footballer in a bland kind of average car, do you?
No. He's quite amazing now when I go to Arsenal, and I go in the same entrance that I used to go in but I'm not allowed in the first team car park anymore. I have to go around the back now because I'm a coach.
No way, is that right?
Yeah. So when I was playing, you'd go into the first team car park, and there were some nice cars in that in there, you know, like Astons and Ferraris, you know, all them sort of things.
Yeah.
But now, when I go past the reserve team car park, that's just as good.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So the reserve team car park is just as good as what the first team car park was.
I wonder what the car parks are worth. You know, if you go right, first team, second team, up and down the country, all the Premier League clubs. I mean, it's billions.
Exactly.
It's got to be, hasn't it?
Yeah. You know, and it's like they don't just have one car now, do they? You know, they have a fleet.
Absolutely. I mean, it's the sort of car parks, Jason, where you and I could spend hours just walking around, just looking at stuff before we've even gone anywhere.
Yeah.
I can remember when I was at QPR, and the club was sponsored by Ford. Mm-hmm. And so all the players, you got a club car, you know. And Jim Smith was the manager then. He says, right, you know, so we've got this new deal. He says, you can choose any Ford car you want up to a Sierra. And we're like, okay, then. So, like, all the lads are getting, escorts. But there's a little bit before this. So they're getting escorts and Sierras and all them. And I got myself a Sierra Estate because I was into my fishing.
Yeah.
And I just wondered, and I don't know why, but this would probably be around about 88, something like that. I got a chocolate brown Sierra. Right? I don't know why. and I had it, and like the lads were like taking the mickey out of me, you know, because like they got their Sierras and escorts and stuff, and were like whizzing around. And I was like, I don't care. I've got all my fishing gear fits in the back of that.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, Jim Smith, he pulls me in training, and he says, Dave, he says, I've got some good news and some bad news. And I went, what's the good news? He went, well, Tottenham have come in for you. They want to buy you. And I was like, so what's the bad news? And he went, I don't have to sell you. And I was like, oh. I was like, so why did you tell me? And he was like, he said, just to keep you happy, I'll let you choose any car that's done by Ford.
Yeah.
And he thought I was going to like get either a nicer Sierra or a Granada or what. And I went, oh, okay then. And then I went away and I knew that they were making Cosworths. Right.
Yeah. See, so, I thought he was going to be that.
So I ordered this Cosworth car, and about a week later, Jim Smith pulls me. He's like, "What's this bloody car you've ordered?" I said, "Well, you said to me any car you can afford me," and he was like, "Oh, right. Oh, whatever." They didn't realise that I'd ordered a Ford Cosworth. The lads were going mad. They were, "How come you get that car and we've got Sierras and Escorts to drive around in?"
Proper bits of kit, those were, weren't they?
Yeah. Was it the one that Spender had? Was it the Sapphire Cosworth? Was it one of
it
those?
Was the Sapphire one. Yeah, it was the Sapphire, because there was the Sierra Cosworth, weren't they, with the big, massive, like double fin.
Yeah,
the bike.
Yeah, the whale tail thing. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then the Sierra one was just like the one fin. But what I done, Dave, is I got. So have you heard of Andy Rouse, the rally driver?
Mm-hmm.
So he did 30 conversions, limited edition, 30 conversions on Cosworths, and made them 30% faster.
Wow.
That's on top of
it. Because they needed that, didn't they?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it was like a rocket. It was so cool. You know, but like you said, that now, that's going to be worth a lot of money, isn't it?
Yeah, imagine. Well, do you know what? I think it was a show called Race Retro last year.
Mm.
A Escort Cosworth, it was immaculate, went for £600,000.
Whoa.
And it started off, I don't know him that well, but a good pal of mine knows the auctioneer well. And they were, and he thought 150, 160, 170 on a good day, and it went for over £600,000.
Whoa.
What's gone wrong with the world? That's mental, isn't it?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
that's crackers, David. Bring us up to present day then, in terms of, and you know where I'm going with this, because I might have had a little bit of a tip off from your lovely lady wife that there is one particular vehicle in your fleet right? Which is now the pride and joy. Let's deal with that first and then tell us what else you've got. So what's your latest present that you got from your wife?
Yeah, so it was my 60th in September and I turned up at the house and there was a white transit van in the driveway. Mm. But Frankie had hidden it really well because she phoned me up and she, as I'm coming back from, I was coming back from Arsenal actually, and she says, oh, by the way, there's a white transit van in our driveway. It's next door neighbours are having some work done. I said it was okay to park in there. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. So I drives by, I parks, and I walk straight past this van, even though when I later found out it got like yellow ribbons on it. So I walked past this van, like taking no notice of it. And then as I walk through the gate, like Frankie's there waiting for me. And she gives me this little box, like all wrapped up. And I was like, what's that? She went, it's your birthday present. I was like, oh, all right then. And because she told me, because we went away from my birthday, to Geneva. And she says, oh, I can't get your present. I can't bring your present with me because it's too big.
Yeah.
Yet she gave me this like little box. And I was like, why? What's in there? And I looked in, obviously it's the car key for the van. So I'll go back out and I'm like, oh my God. And it's my fishing van. It's a Ford Transit. Ford Transit Custom fishing van. But it was white. Doesn't exactly blend in when you're at the lakes.
Oh, yeah, that's a good
so point. I've had it wrapped.
Oh,
I've had it wrapped khaki green. I've had it matte khaki green. And it
algae green. Lake algae green.
Exactly. Yeah. So now that's pride and place on the drive. It's a Ford Transit Custom in khaki green, and I get all my fishing gear in it. I've actually slept in there a few nights, you know. I get my bed chair in the back of it, and that's pride and place. That was a great birthday present.
Hey, now looking back through some of your history, I'm a bit confused because am I right in thinking you're 6'5"?
Four.
6'4". How the hell do you get in an XK8?
I know.
Or a TVR 400. Yeah. How do you fit in it?
Yeah, well, I managed. There might have been a little dent on the roof.
I mean, it must be tight.
If you notice, like, all them, so, and I had an Aston Martin now as well. I had a DP7. They're all soft tops.
Right. And he sits in the back like Hightower off Police Academy.
But that was a thing, like, with the XK8, I actually have that, like, lowered as low as it would go.
Because it's a small car inside, isn't it?
Yeah. It is, yeah. And I actually crashed that in the Brumming services up the M1.
Did you?
So in the car park of the service, it was packed. And there was, like, no markings on the roads. And the two cars have just, like, come at different angles and hit each other. And, like, as I've got out, like, the Jag just, like, disintegrated at the front end. And there was, like, bits of it everywhere. And I got out, I'm like, oh, no. And there was a girl driving the other car who was actually on her way up to Top Gear because she was test driving the car.
Right.
No way.
But anyway, got out, made sure she was okay and everything. Then I looked and there's, like, a bus full of kids, like, all looking. They're like, oh, my God. You could see, like, oh, my God, look at the car. Oh, my God, it's David Seaman.
Safe hands, my ass.
Yeah, exactly. And I swear, and this is gospel true, they were picking pieces of my car up off the floor and asking me to sign it. And then, yeah, so then I had that, and then I got, which was a car of my dreams, an Aston Martin DB7 soft top. You know, that was gorgeous, but I landed upside down in that, and it cost the insurance company quite a lot of money. But luckily, you know, it was a soft top, and I flipped it, landed upside down, and I wasn't going that fast. I just lost the back end, and it just started raining.
Yeah.
And landed in some bushes and that, got out, not a scratch on me.
I had it rebuilt,
and it was like £54,000 insurance bill, and I only had to pay £200 excess because I was like fully protected and everything.
You've done well
back in the day.
That's the one, isn't it? If I'm right in thinking, that's the one that you sort of loved and lost, isn't it? The DV7, wouldn't you'd have another one of those, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would have done. Yeah, you know, and. Because, like I said, they didn't write it off. They rebuilt it. And then I kept that for a good 10 years because it was a lucky car for me because I didn't have a scratch on me. Mm-hmm. And then we moved into the house where we're at now. And we've got, like, quite a bobbly or bumpy lane that leads down to our house. And there's these potholes and stuff like that normally, especially in the winter when it rains and stuff. And, like, every time I would drive it up, it'd be cracking the bottom of me ass, and I'm like, oh, no. Yeah. So I ended up getting rid of that, and Yeah, I'm past that stage now, though. I'm happy with my range, and yeah, I've got my van.
So that's the everyday drive, then, is it? The Range Rover. I mean, that's your workhorse, isn't it?
I like. Yeah, I've had a Range Rover for about, it's got to be at least 35 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you know what? They're good bits of kit, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. You know,
especially now. Now, they're really quite.
And they're more reliable than that now. And you know, I remember going up to Range Rover when I was like when I told you I was sponsored by them, and then they knew that I loved them, and I actually had the 500,000th ever produced Range Rover off the conveyor belt or whatever it is, production line. They would like they got balloons on it and everything. And my one was a 500,000th Range Rover. It was a green one then back then.
Wowzer! So electric? Fancy that?
No, not yet. I just hear too many people like you know bad stories about them. Mm. You know, not so much about the cars, but waiting times at charging points and stuff like that. You know, so like I'm waiting for the country to be more in gear with it. You know, and up to speed with charging points and stuff.
Do you know what? You can't disagree with you there.
No. Mm. It's always infrastructure, isn't it, that we always talk about. Yeah. You know, everybody, I think, is of the same opinion whereby theoretically it's a good idea.
Yeah.
But the practicalities of it is what then makes, you know, people like yourself and people like us also have that dilemma, isn't it, Jase?
Well, yes, and now we're all friends. You obviously will get like a little certificate from us, which says you must have a V8 in your fleet forevermore. And when everyone's driving those electric things, we'll also be allowed to use a hard shoulder in our V8 at whatever speed we like.
Exactly.
Wouldn't that be fantastic? It's like a lad's license.
Yeah, there's something not right when a car pulls away and there's no noise. There's just something not right about that.
Yeah. I know. It's weird when you're walking along as well and it's just behind you and you have no real sense of it, of it being there, which I think is always quite eerie. Yeah.
But I've been in, so Dico's got a Tesla, Lee Dixon's got a Tesla, and I've been in that of his, and oh my word, that the acceleration on them is incredible. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But like I say, I'm past all that fast driving now.
mate, shush. You're never past that. No.
So listen, a couple more questions left, David. There's one here from me. I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Of all the cars you've ever owned, starting all the way back from the days of the Vauxhall Viva through the Capris, TVR, XK8, DB7... You're allowed to pick one and one only and stick with it for the rest of your life. Which one is it and why? And you can throw in the fishing van as well, by the way. I'll give you that one. So anything. Which one is it and why? But only one.
The choice for me is between an Aston and my Range Rover.
Yeah.
I think I know
what's going to win.
Yeah.
And if I've only got one to be with... I think it's going to be the Range Rover.
It's got to be, hasn't it?
Do you know what? Because I can get all my fishing gear in it.
And you can go the tip in it.
Exactly. And that's what I used to do before I got the van. Mm. All my gear would go in the Range Rover. And I had this system where I knew where everything went and it fitted perfectly. When back seats would go down flat and everything. And I would get all my fishing gear in the back of the Range Rover. So, I think, if it was just one, it would have to be the Range
Rover. It's the wise choice, isn't it, Dave?
I think so. Because as I say, you know, you're never going to choose a TVR, are you, for example? You know, I mean...
It was great fun when it worked.
Of course, Well, that's the thing.
I can guarantee that's not still alive. That's turned to dust now, hasn't it? It's just dust somewhere. Yeah.
I'm sure the exhaust is still vibrating somewhere, though.
Somewhere over the rainbow.
Yeah. Hey, David, we always think that music and cars go particularly well together. So just imagine you've got a fantasy drive. Where are you? Where are you going? What are you listening to? And most importantly, what are you driving? So this is your fantasy drive. It can be anything.
Fantasy drive. So any car. I'd love to have a go in one of the new Astons.
Yeah.
You know, the new shape ones, they just look incredible. I love the fact now that Aston have gone for the double or the four exhaust pipes now at the back rather than just the two. Mm-hmm. Because I just think it looks so much more sportier.
Yeah.
So it would be that. It would probably go in driving either through France, which me and Frankie did when in the Range Rover when we were undercover. early days.
Oh, right, early days.
When the press were still trying to chase us. Oh, we've got a parcel for you. Where shall we deliver it? Never you mind. it would either be through France or Scotland, because we drove up to Scotland just past Loch Lomond a couple of years ago, and that was incredible.
Yeah,
driving through Scotland and that, you know, through the mountains and the highlands and everything. So, yeah, and then music. So on my favourites, I've got things like Prince, I've got Queen, I've got Def Leppard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've even got driving Kate Bush. Stuff.
I know, but I've got Kate great, Bush.
Great. Yeah, but that's a great, she's great to drive to. Yeah.
Bon Jovi.
Does that sound weird?
I know what you mean.
Yeah, it sounds weird. Kate Bush, it sounds great to drive to. Yeah. it's a good quote.
Yeah. So, like, just like a real mixture. But if I had to choose one album, I'm thinking it would be Queen. Is it the Platinum? And it's got all their greatest hits on that, and it's just can't go wrong,
can you? I tell you what I did recently. You're just mentioning Scotland, David, and I don't know whether you've done it or aware of it, but something I did last summer, which was on my bucket list, and I'm delighted that I finally got around to doing it, is the North Coast 500. Have you heard of that?
It's a
500 mile or roughly 500 mile trip from Inverness back to Inverness again. So you can either go either coast, right? Because obviously the top of Scotland's like a peninsula. Well, it is a peninsula.
Yeah. Well, I used to go salmon fishing up in Thurso.
Exactly. Right. So, you know, and that's one of the places that we stopped on route. So we actually went up the west coast.
Yeah.
And then we went across and we stayed in Thurso and then we came down the east coast. And so it's the start and finish in Inverness. But honestly, I have to say, and I've been lucky enough to go on some nice drives around, you know, I've driven around the west coast of Ireland, I've driven through Italy, through France, you know, the Riviera, I've driven across the States. I have to say, pound for pound, I think it's possibly the most beautiful route anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
You know, granted, I've not been to New Zealand and Australia or whatever, so but for what I've done, honestly, it's difficult to beat and it's well worth it if you get a chance.
Yeah, because you've got the mountains and the highlands, and then you've got the lochs, and then you've got the sea as well.
It's amazing.
You've got all of it. You know, I drove from where I used to live near Watford all the way up to Thurso in one go.
Yeah,
wow, that's a trip.
You know, and did it in like 9.5 hours as well, which was a bit naughty, but. Yeah, I was going salmon fishing, so I had to get there.
Yeah, you'd have been over on your tacker, wouldn't you, if you were a professional driver?
Just a little bit.
And the roads are quiet, aren't they, Dave?
Yeah.
That's the nice thing, you know. Mm. You can enjoy yourself.
Yeah, because it's like driving up that M6, isn't it? When you get to the Lake District, and then you start going further north of that, and it's just like wow.
Yeah, it just gets prettier and prettier, and the roads get quieter, which is very, very nice. What a lovely image to end on. I think on that note, Jason Plato, I think you need to take us out.
Well, unfortunately, that is it for this week's Fueling Around, powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Dave, as always, thanks to you, but a huge thanks to our special guest this week, the one and only Mr. David Seaman, MBE. Thank you, David.
Lovely
to chat.
Thank you. Absolutely loved it.
No, really, really good. Nice to have a chat about cars for the first time. I can't believe it's the first time. It genuinely has been the first time. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at Jason Plato or at David Vitti. Actually, I should say on X now, shouldn't I? Because it's not Twitter anymore, isn't it? You can get in touch with us on X or Twitter at Jason Plato or at David Vitti. And if you've liked what you've heard, feel free to give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button and share the podcast on all your socials.
Thanks for listening, peeps, and we'll see you next time. Ta-da!